and something we've all thought about at one time or the other. And that's the question, do the ends justify the means? These source sheets are coming around that way. Now, this is a story that I think we're all familiar with, but it is appropriate to come back and examine it. The story that we're discussing today is the story of Benot Lot. It's a story that makes us uncomfortable. It's a story that we walk away from with a feeling of, ew, gross. Why is that included in the Torah? And as a matter of fact, many of you know that many times it's skipped in elementary school, perhaps even in high school as well. But before we go into the actual psukim of the Benot Lot, it is important for us to get a little bit of a background. So Bereishit Perek Yutet begins, remember, after Perek Yutchet, which describes the arrival of the Malachim in the house of Avraham. Hashem tells Sarah that she's going to have a son. Then Avraham prays for Sodom. 10, 8, you know, save the city on that point. God says there are not the tzaddikim. So Perek Yutet begins with, Vayavau shnei ha-malachim Sodoma be'erev, v'lot yoshev b'sha'ar Sodom, v'yar lot v'yakam likvatam, v'yishtachu apayim arza. Sorry. So our chapter begins. Now, how many angels had come to Avraham? Three. How many angels come here? Two. What happened? Why did we lose an angel?
One of the angels was a messenger that was a specific.
Each angel, that is correct. Each angel has a specific job.
Right.
So therefore the angel, one of the angels who had come to tell Sarah or to cure Abraham is no longer necessary. We need two angels coming to Sodom, one to destroy the city and the other to save Lot and his family. When was it that they came to Abraham?
Before.
What time of day?
Right, Kachom Hayom.
And here already, what time of day is it? It's Erev. How come it takes angels so long to get to Sodom?
Because
Avraham had to pack up. He had to pack up Tzedel Aderech. But also the angels took a long time to get there so that perhaps Avraham could change the decree. So they get there first in Erev. And Lot is sitting the Shar Sodom the same way that Avraham is sitting at the gate of his tent, and he gets up and he greets them. He doesn't run to them as Avraham does, because, very simply, it's night. And he doesn't see them from far. He only sees them when they come. Vayomer, and he says to them, Hineina Adonai tsuruna el beit avdechem velinu v'rachatzu adlechem. He says, please, my master, come to my house and sleep and wash your feet. Now, Avraham had offered them first to wash their feet, and then sleep. Rashi over there says it's because Avraham doesn't want to let the dust of Avodah Zarah into our house. But here we understand also that because of the laws of Sodom, that you could not bring in guests, Lot wants it to look like they just came. So therefore he says, look, they haven't even washed. They just came and they're just leaving. V'ishkaptem v'halachtechem l'darkechem, and then you will go on your way. V'ayomu lo ki b'rachov nalin. But they refuse his request. Avram's request they accept. Lot's request they say no. And we understand why they say no, because this is really a test for Lot. V'yiftzar b'me'od, and Lot pressures them. V'yasu oylov, so they come to his house. V'yavo el beito, v'yas lehem mishteh, he too makes for them a party, umatzot afa vayochelu, and he bakes the matzot and they eat. And of course, Rashi tells us that this is how we know it's Pesach. Terem yishkavu, but before they even have a chance to lay down, va'anshei ha'ir anshei Sodom nosobul habayit minar v'yadzaken kol hayam mikotzeh kol ha'am mikotzeh. We understand that right away they're not even there a short time, and the people of Sodom surround the house, and it seems to be old, young, everybody. The whole group is there. You sort of have to picture those movies that we have with Wild West, you know, with a mob. That's what you think, the mob scene. Remember the whole concept of what a mob thinks about, and it's nighttime and they're carrying torches and they're probably chanting. Vayikru'u Lot, and they call out to Lot. Vayomu lo, ayeha anashim asher bo'u elecha halayla. Where are those men that came to you at night? Hotzi'em eleinu v'neda'a otam. Bring them out so that we can know them, and according to the commentators here, they are looking to sexually abuse the guests. Now, what was the purpose? What is the rationale of sexually abusing the guests? It can't possibly be a crime of passion, because the entire town is there. Okay? So what is it? It's this idea of we cannot tolerate hospitality in our town, and therefore if we abuse guests, they won't come again. The word gets out very quickly. Vayetzelem Lot. So why don't they want to let guests in? Okay, let's, you want to go back to that question? We can. And then you have to ask the other question. If they don't let guests in, how do they let? Guess what, or how did they let Lot move in? So first of all, you can sort of, I'll tell you, it's very easy. It's very easy for you to understand this when you think about the immigration laws that were instituted in America during World War II. I mean, you know, boatloads of immigrants came to the docks and they were like, sorry, we can't help you. Okay, so that's exactly where they were the first ones to have anti-immigration laws. Lot, why did they let Lot in? Because he had a degree. Because he had business. He had connections to Avram. He had money. So he doesn't fall under the concept of immigration law.
At the time, wasn't Sodom like a very fertile?
Sodom was extremely fertile. It was extremely beautiful. It was extremely wealthy. And they just didn't want to share. Vayetzaleim Lot HaPetcha. So Lot comes outside. Vadelet Sagara Harab. And he closes the door behind him. Vayomer Al Na Achai Tareyu. And he says, please, my brothers, don't do this evil thing. Now, the question of what is evil here becomes an interesting question. And he says to them like this, Hineina li shtei banot asher lo yadu ish. He goes, I have two virgin daughters. Otzian na et hen alechem. I will bring them out to you. Va'asu lahem katov beinechem. And you can abuse them. Rak l'anashim ha'el al ta'asu davar. But to these men don't do anything, ki al kein ba'u b'tzel karati, because they have come under my responsibility. Now, how do we understand Lot's behavior here? Like, what is Lot thinking? By offering his two daughters in order to save the guests. Is this a positive or is this a negative? That's right. We view it as a very negative. That's correct. It seems to be, that's right. We view it as an extremely negative. And let's just see it even inside, even stronger. If you look at the Ramban in source number five, I think the Ramban says it very beautifully. He says, Mitoch shivcho shel ha'ish hazeh banu lidei ginuto. From the praise of this man, that look what he's doing, he's willing to risk his life in order to save his guests, we also, though at the same time, learn about his failings. Shehaya toreach ma'od alachsanya shelo. He's willing to do anything in order to prevent his guests. Latzilotam mipnei shebo b'tzel farato. Because remember, he doesn't know they're angels. He doesn't have a responsibility to these men. Yet he's willing to do, just because they happen to be in his house, he's willing to do whatever he can to save them. Aval, but, sheyifayes anshei ha'ir behefker b'notav. But to offer his daughters to save them, ein zekim roa leiv. That's really a negative thing. Shaloha inyan hazima binashim rachok beinav. And what does that tell you about him? It tells you that sexual abuse of women to him was not a terrible thing. It was not foreign from him. It was not, he doesn't have such an attitude towards women. And obviously he didn't think he was doing such a terrible thing to his daughters. And therefore our Rabbanim said in the Tanhuma, Binahug shebeolam, adam moser atzmo al benotav al ishto v'horeg o neherag. He said, we expect from most men in the world, in order to protect their wives and their daughters, they will either kill or be killed. trying to protect their daughters. And not only is this one not killing or not being killed, Ella, but he's saying, here, you know, take my daughters. He's even offering it. It's not even like they said it, he's offering it. Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, La'atzmecha ata mishamer. You're saving them for yourselves, which we'll understand momentarily. But we see essentially that the girls are growing up in a house. With what kind of message are they learning about sexual, deviation, you know, and respect for women and all those kind of things? They're growing up in a home where they're getting a very negative message about that. So let's just talk about this for 1 second. If indeed this is what kind of person Lot is, why does Lot deserve to be saved?
Maybe he's the best of the bad lot.
He's the best. So does the best of the bad lot deserve to be saved? Why do we have to save the best of the bad lot?
Isn't there an opinion that...
Okay, so there's one explanation is to say that, yes, it is the merit of Avraham, and that is why he is saved. And that's, by the way, remember, Avraham says if there are 10 tzaddikim in the city. Avraham assumed there were 10. How did Avraham assume there were 10? He said he figured it was Lot and the wife, 4 daughters, and 4 sons-in-law. That's how we get to 10, and that was Avram's thought, and that's why Avram stops at 10, because he figured that that's where they are. So on one hand, we could say it's just the merit of Avraham, and that's why he deserves to be saved. However, there is an alternative to say, which you can say at a certain time, that what is Lot doing here? Lot is doing the mitzvah of Hachnasat Ochim, hospitality at the risk to his life. He does have some of his merit, just the way he has mercy on his guests, so God has mercy on him as well. But we understand that the angels never ask him for refuge. He gives it to them. At the same time, though, don't his daughters need a safe place to be? But he doesn't.
He was operating in the mores of the society at the time. He was doing such a bad thing, but that's what they did to him.
But at the same time, and let's talk about this, there was actually, and this is something you are familiar with, there was actually, Lot actually had 5 daughters, not 4. What happened to the 5th daughter?
Where did you
have 2? I'll tell you. Lot has 5 daughters. He has... Well, which is actually interesting. Let's go back. So first of all, let's go back when he offers his daughter. So we look at it this way. We're looking at it. We're saying, like, what was he possibly thinking? If you look in source 3A, source 3A is the Sferno. The Sferno says, Otziana et hen alechem. I will offer my daughters to you. Chashav sheyakumu lokche benotav. The Ka'an She'avon Be'nehem. He figured that these 2 daughters in the house were actually engaged. And he figured when he offers to the crowd his 2 daughters, the son-in-laws, the future son-in-laws, would get up and say, bad idea. And in that way, they would protect the daughters. That's what he expected. So it wasn't that perhaps softens a little bit Lot's action, but it does not. Now, you're asking me, so those are 2 daughters are with him at home. When, I didn't bring you the Psukim, but, I did, in Pasuk Yudalid, the angels finally introduce themselves to Lot, and they say, we're going to destroy the city. Vayetze Lot vayedaber el chatanav lokche benotav. It's the next Pasuk in Yudalid there, where Lot goes out and he speaks to his son-in-laws, those who are going to take his daughters. He says, get up, we have to run away. Because God is destroying the city. And his sons-in-law think it's a big joke. So according to Mefarshim here, the Chotnav, he had another 2 married daughters who live in the city, who we understand from this Pasuk that they have married Sidomites, and they are not interested in listening to his, you know, the end of the world is near speech. But there is also another commentary, which all of you are familiar with, perhaps you just didn't connect it to this story, is that Lot actually had a fifth daughter. So the two single daughters, two married daughters, and there's a fifth daughter who doesn't show up here, because she showed up in Perek Yudchet. In Perek Yudchet, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that he's going to come down to visit Sodom, he says, I'm going to go down and see, God says, is that cry that I hear have Sodom done, did it. In other words, that's what God says, that he's going to go and make a judgment. Now the term hakitsa akata is a female single cry. So first of all, just according to Pshat, it just means the city. We talk about city as feminine, and we talk about it in singular. The city never sleeps. But the Medrash here says that God is coming down to see the cries of a single individual woman. Who was the single individual woman? It was the daughter of Lot. A immigrant, a poor person came to town, and the policy in Sodom was you were not allowed to feed them. And the hope was either they would die of starvation or they would leave. And meanwhile, this guy isn't going anywhere. He's still there, and he's there Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. So you bring out the secret police, and the secret police set up a dragnet, and they check out to see. And lo and behold, they discover that every day on the way to work, Lot's daughter is dropping them off, you know, a piece of bread, and so they catch her, and what do they do to her? That's the story with the honey that you know from when you're children. The story they tell, according to the Midrash, is not only have you broken the law of Sodom, but we need to punish you, leman yedu ve'yir'u. So according to the Midrash, and I suppose that most of you are familiar with this, they cover her body with honey, and they leave her out on the roof, and she gets stung to death. Okay, so now essentially what I think what's important about that story is that when we say what the chut does Lot have, so we see that Lot himself is a machnis orech, in order, and he risks his own life, and we see that he has been successful in passing down this behavior to the next generation.
Isn't there an opinion that Lot is aware that these were angels?
Yes, so if you notice interestingly enough, it says in verse 1, Vayavau shnei hamalachim Sodoma. When they came to Avraham, they were not called malachim, they were called anashim. Which means just compared to Avraham, they were on the same level. But it could be that it's true that Lot at this point recognizes that there is something unusual about these people. These are not just the average traveler. That could be as well. Okay, anyway, so we all have this in the back as a background to our story. And we understand. You don't have it on your source sheet. It's in Perek Yudchet. It's in Perek Yudchet Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Perek Yudchet Pasuk Chaf Aleph. So, in other words, if we had to sum up Lot's behavior from the beginning of this chapter, what would we say about him?
That he values hospitality.
He values hospitality to the extent that he will do whatever needs to be done. Okay, which means he has decent intentions. The methods that he uses are questionable. Okay, now let's just look at this idea, by the way, that what food does Lot serve?
Matzah.
He serves matzah. Lot is outside the door. Everybody else is inside the door being protected. The men from Sodom, in order to protect them, the angels give them what affliction?
Blindness.
What is this going to remind you of?
What was Avram thinking when he said that Sarah was his sister? What was he thinking?
Okay, we'll get to that after she, okay?
Because it's a little,
a questionable as well. Okay, but I can't get to that now. It's not connected to the share. I'll discuss it with you afterwards.
So Lot,
Sarah and Lot, by the way, are brother and sister, according to many of the commentators. So Lot, Avraham's wife, but Lot's sister, which means that Lot is Avraham's brother-in-law and nephew. Anyway, let's leave, okay? So, but let's listen to this again. He's serving matzah. The family is safe behind the door. the people are being struck with blindness. Lot has to leave the city in a hurry. Right, right. You are supposed to remember that there is a element of Mitzrayim and Yitziat Mitzrayim here, and we will see that in a moment. Now, we do see them leaving Sodom against their will. The Malachim basically have to take them by their hand and force them out. Lot leaves with his wife, who's by the name, you might want to know her name, is either Iris or Irit. We're not sure if it's with the Samak or a Taf, Irit. Now, what happens to her? She, as you all know, turns into a pillar of salt, and you should just know that the Gemara, when it discusses, you know that when you go to certain places and you see miracles that happened, there's a bracha that you can make. So the Gemara says that you see the pillar of Eshet Lot, you can make a bracha on it, which means that at that time they seem to have known, and she probably was somewhere in this area, they were able to see her. Another one. Yeah, I got it. Okay. Right. So it depends. But the point. Right. So the point of that is, she becomes right. She becomes a pillar of salt. And this is a well-known, another well-known midrash. First of all, why does she become a pillar of salt? She was pillar because she turns around. The Malachim told her, "You cannot turn around." Now, why does she turn around? Right. So there are a couple of suggestions. One reason is that she didn't want to leave. She was so connected that she just didn't want to leave. I think another possibility, which is one that I think is easy for us to understand, she was looking to see if the other daughters were following. And that's so we sort of understand that, you know, desire to look. And anyway, and why does she become salt? This is also a well-known, probably one of the well-known midrashim, because it says that the angels get to the house, and it says before they even have a chance to sit down, the neighbors are there surrounding the house. The midrash asks, how does the neighbors know that they're there? Because she goes next door and she says, "I need some salt." And they say to her, "Why do you need salt?" And she says, "Well, my stupid husband brought home guests and I have to find salt for them." And that's how the town found out, and therefore she becomes a pillar of salt as a midah keneged midah. Anyway, I think that the reason this is all important is because we need to understand that once Lot has left, finally, Sodom, I think both he and his daughters have undergone a very traumatic experience. Mom is gone. Two other sisters are gone. The home gone. Town gone. Friends gone. Okay, I mean, literally, they left with, you know, the clothing on their backs, and they really must have some sort of post-trauma suffering that they have. Anyway, so let's begin, that's all in terms of introduction, to begin to the next part of the story, which begins at the bottom of the first page, Vaya'al Lot Mitzoar. Now, there were five cities of five, like, boroughs, we would use, of Sodom. Originally, five were supposed to be destroyed. Lot said to the Malachim, "Please let me go to the fifth one. It's Tzoar, it's small, its sins are small, save that." And so the Malachim tell him, "Yes, you can go to Tzoar." So he goes to Tzoar, but then it says very in the Pasuk, look at that Pasuk is written, Vaya Lot Mitzoar, Vayashev Bahar, Ushte Benotav Imo. That Ki Yore Lashevet Bitzoar, Vayashev Bimahara, Hu Ushne Benotav. The Pasuk is really divided into two. Okay, twice it says him and his daughters. The beginning of the verse is very neutral. He leaves Tzoar. Now the Pasuk tells us, why does he leave Tzoar? Ki yare la shevet b'tzoar. He's afraid. What is he afraid of? Yeah, he's afraid that it's also going to be destroyed. He's afraid that also it's going to be destroyed. But already here in the second part of the Pasuk, he goes to live in a cave. Now, I think most readers, as soon as you hear cave, you start getting nervous. Caves are not places that you want to live in. Caves are not comfortable places. And the fact that he and his daughters are going to this cave already begins to make us question what's going to happen.
In those years, it was kind of
again, I'm not sure. They used the caves. They did use caves for storage.
They
used caves for shelter during times of the Bar Kokhba caves. It wasn't as uncommon, Nahon, but it wasn't, you know, happy home.
No, it wasn't happy home.
Okay.
It wasn't as bizarre as it is today.
Okay, I'll give you that. Okay, so now they're living in this cave. Now let's read the Psukim through and then we'll go back. Vayomer habichira elatziira. The older daughter says to the younger daughter, Avinu zaken, our father is old, v'ish'ein ba'aretz lavo elenu kederach kol ha'aretz, and there is no man to marry us as is accepted in society. Lecha nashke et avinu yayin. So let us give our father, let's get him drunk, v'nishkava imo, and we'll sleep with him, v'nichayet me'avinu zara, and we'll have children with him. Vatashkena et avien yayin balayla hahu. So that night they give him wine. Vatavoha bechira vatishkav et aviha. And the older daughter comes and she sleeps with her father. Velo yada b'shichva uvebekoma. And he's not aware, not when she lay down and not when she got up. Vayihimi maharat, and it's the next day. Vatomer habechira elatziira. And again, the older daughter says to the younger daughter, Hein shachafti emesh et avi, I slept with our father last night. Nashkenu yayin gam halayla, let's get him drunk again tonight. Ubo'i shichvo imo, and now you will go and sleep with him. V'nichye me'avinu zara, and we will have children from our father. Vatashkena gam balayla hu et avi en yayin, and they again that night get him drunk. Vatakam hatziira, and the tziira gets up. Vatashkav imo, and she sleeps with him, v'lo yada b'shachva uvekoma, and he doesn't know when she lay down and when she got up. V'taharena shtei benot lot me'avihen, and the two girls become pregnant from their father. V'ateleid ha'bechira ben, and the older one has a son, v'tikra shmo Mo'av, and his name becomes Mo'av, hu avi Mo'av ad hayom, and he is the father of the nation that we call Mo'av until today. Vatsiira gamhi yalda ben, and the younger one also gives birth to a son, Vatikrishmo ben Ami. But she calls him the son of my nation, Vahu Avi Bnei Amon Ad Hayom, and he is the forefather of the Ammonite nation. Okay. So now we have, let's go back and start analyzing this story. So what is the major problem that the daughters seem to have? Okay, so does it say that there's nobody left?
Didn't they go with him
with Tzar?
Only Sodom got destroyed.
And Sodom and its four boroughs got destroyed? So the question is, it seems to be, that is correct, it seems to be that the girls think that...
That's actually a different
issue. We'll get to that in a minute. So first of all, the first problem is Avinu Zaken. That's the first problem. And I think it might not even mean chronologically old, but after the trauma that he has experienced, he's old, he's tired, you know, he's ready to, you know, throw in the towel. Okay? So we have this idea of the daughters say, Ish ein ba'aretz lavo eilenu. Now, the Rashi that many of you are familiar with appears in source 6b. 6b, the ish ein ba'aretz svurot hayu shekol ha'olam nechrav kimo b'dor ha'mabul. And I think that is the most common, by the way, explanation here of the psukim, that the daughters feel that they are the only ones left. If that is indeed true, how does that change our perception?
Can they think that they only were... righteous ones left?
No, this Rashi says they are the only humans.
I mean, maybe they, I'm just wondering if they...
We'll get to that and we'll get to it. There is a commentator who says that. That's right. So according to Rashi, and I said many of the commentators, what they are essentially doing is saving the world. Capital S, you know? That they view that as we're the last three human beings in the world and we have to do whatever it takes to save the world. And that's what it says.
If you look at the words, that's exactly
and
what it
that's says. What it says in the Pshat. And you will also notice that there is no condemnation in the Pshat for their action.
Okay. How do they expect to save the world with
the two boys? Oh, excellent question. So how do they expect to save the world if there are two boys? So one second. As a matter of fact, what they are, if you look at source 5A, it's the Ramban. We saw the beginning one before. The Ramban continues and says, "V'ulai kiyamu naseh anachnu ha-maaseh ha-ra'oi lanu, ki rachem Elohim v'nolid zachar u'nekeva v'nekayem ha'olam mehem." They said, you know what? Humanity has to do their part, and we expect God to do his part. We'll... That's what they say about, but this is the idea also that God is going to give one a son and one is a daughter because they are doing their part. And the pasuk we have in Tehillim, ki oleb chesed yiboneh. God has established the world of chesed, and v'lo lechinam hitzileinu Hashem. They said it's no coincidence that God saved us. God saved us. He must have a plan. And so we are part of that plan, and we'll do our part, and he will do his. So then the question becomes, well, why didn't they discuss this with Father? If they think this is so righteous, and they think that we're saving the world, let's include him. Why do we need to make him drunk? So Rabban continues, V'hine hayut snuot. Okay? That's what the Rabban says about them, that these girls were actually modest. And they couldn't bring themselves to discuss this with their father. You know that there are seven laws, that the Noahide laws, and that they are not allowed to do, but according to the strict letter of the law, a Noahide may marry his daughter. So even though it was allowed, they just couldn't bring themselves to speak. And listen to what the last line in the Ramban says. Oh, shahaya hadavar mecho'ar me'od be'enei hadorot. Or, the Ramban says, just incest was so ugly and so unaccepted, even society then, v'lo na'aseh kein me'olam. This just wasn't accepted. So therefore they couldn't say something to their father. V'chein rabosena b'agdavat maginim et lot me'od. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So if we look at opinion number one, the girls are actually, again, very similar. This should come to us as not a surprise, because just the way their father had good intentions, but the way he carried it out was problematic. Here too, we can say the daughters also had good intentions, the way they carry it out is problematic. In addition, where did the girls learn this kind of behavior?
In a borderless society.
They learned this behavior at home. Yeah. When their father offers them to the crowd, he obviously has taught them that, you know, sexual deviation is something that we can tolerate. So once they've learned that, they come up with this plan that you can imagine somebody else in the same situation would never even think of such a possibility. But because of the way Lot has raised them, to them, this is a... Now, what is the problem with saying that they think the whole world is destroyed? So first of all, number one you said is, well, don't they remember they went Soar, you know, 10 minutes ago. Also, in addition, who else is alive that they know about?
Avraham.
What do they think happened to Avraham and Avraham's family? Like, why don't they consider that a option?
So how would they know that? And also,
So they
don't know. Like, it was there when they were there, but
maybe it was destroyed. So that's the thing. We can sort of try to justify that situation as well. And I said that is the opinion of most of the commentators, that they thought they were the only one in the world. However, let's look at some of the other commentators. Sferno in source 3b. Sferno in 3b says, Avinu zaken v'lo yit'ameitz lahachik nidod al eretz acheret. Our father is old, and therefore he's not going to go start traveling. So you already understand that something else is going to happen. V'ish ein ba'aretz lavo eleinu, v'ein ish bazeh ha-galil ra'oi lavo eleinu. So according to the Sferno, there are other people. But what's the problem? They're not here. They're far away. Okay, so that, if we start going with that, it sort of changes a little bit of our opinion. The Radak here takes it a step further, and the Radak says they're afraid that nobody's going to want to marry them because they have the cooties. They were saved from Sodom. Sodom was obviously a miserable city if God had to destroy it. So who wants to have anything to do with anybody who came out of Sodom? So therefore, according to Radak, it's not that there are no people, and it's not that the people are too far away, but rather they feel that nobody is going to want to marry us. And the Dat Zakenim in 3C and 3D take it even a step further. It should not be 3, I wrote down the wrong number. Do I have the ring of the Dat Zakenim? Takes it even a step further, that what they wanted to say is that they think the other way. Not that nobody's going to marry them because they're from Sodom, but nobody's going to marry them because they're special. What makes them special? They were saved. They were saved. You're saved. You can't just marry anybody. Okay, which is almost the complete opposite of the Radak. But if we go through, that's the Dat Zakenim. So if we go through those opinions, that completely changes our perspective of the girls. Because if we say that they want to save the world, then we say at least we can try to understand what their intentions were. If we follow the Sfan or the Radak, the Dat Zakenim, it makes the girls even worse because they're not trying to save the world anymore. Now, let's ask another question. We said that they left Sodom in a rush. They left just with the shirts on their back. They come to Tzoar, I don't know how long they stay in Tzoar, and the next thing they know is they find themselves in the cave. The girls dream up this plan, and in order for their plan to be successful, what do they need?
Wine.
Wine is an important part. So now, where do they get the wine from? So if you look at Rashi in source 6, C, Yayin vatashkena, Yayin nizdamein lahem bimeara lo tzimehen shnei umot. That God placed the wine in the cave in order for this to happen. Now, I think on a very simple level, have any of you been to Susia? Mm-hmm. You know, in Susia, they take you into the caves and they show you where they used to store the wine. And why would you want to store wine in the cave?
Because it's cooler.
So on the shot level, you can say there was wine because it's close to someone, they were saving it. But you see, Rashi here doesn't go with the pshat. Rashi here goes with a much deeper level. He says that Hashem put the wine there. Now, does that mean the girls don't have bechira?
No.
Of course not, right. They could drink the wine and live happily ever after. That's correct. They do not have to use the wine for what it is, but it is, they do have the wine there. And we do assume, think about this for a minute, we do see God's involvement here. So first of all, the wine is present in the cave. Secondly, they become pregnant. I mean, poor Sarah is trying to become pregnant, you know, the Imahot are trying to become pregnant for years, and these girls become pregnant immediately. And not only become pregnant immediately, and this I think goes back to what you're saying, these two nations that come out of them become important players in the world history, which would also indicate to us that perhaps God is able to approve of this story. Now, there is another way of looking at this story. It's a completely alternative reading, and you can tell me what you think of it. When they say this sentence, V'ish ein ba'aretz lavo elenu, there is only one other time where you have the term yavo elenu. Usually it says Yavo El. Okay? There is only one other place in the Mikra where it says Yavo Eleinu, and that is the Psukim when it talks about Yibum. Yibum, remember, is when a woman's husband dies and there are no children. Then the brother-in-law is supposed to marry the widow, and it says there Yivama Yavo Eleha. Okay, it's that same terminology that only appears here and only appears there. So perhaps the girls know that there are other people alive. Perhaps they know that they could get married. But according to this connection of the two psukim, what is the motivation of the girls? The girls are want to fulfill Yibum in a... Now remember, before biblical times, today Yibum, after the giving of Torah, Yibum is only with the brother-in-law. But before the giving of Torah, and we know this from both Yehudah and from Boaz, that Yibum was any family relative. So even though they knew that they could technically marry somebody else, what would they be losing? They'd be losing the concept of a family continuity. So that their motivation here was one also. What's the whole idea of Yibum, by the way? The whole idea of marrying the dead brothers, you're actually doing a chesed to the dead brother. He did not have children. And by you marrying the widow and you having children, it's as if you're giving this man a certain amount of continuity. So that the daughters, by them marrying their father and having children with him, it's as if they're trying to re-establish the family line with the genetics of the family rather than bringing it in from a strange place.
Although he had children, but they died.
Correct. That's right. So it's not an exact concept of Yibum, and it's not a halachic Yibum, clearly, but if we approach it from this way, it perhaps also changes a little bit our perspective of these women. Again, perhaps it's, again, intentions good, carrying out
methodology
questionable. But think about the other examples. Is their methodology that different than Yehuda and Tamar? Is their methodology that different than Ruth? The answer is yes. Why? Because we're talking about a father. You know, we're talking about a daughter-in-law, we're talking about a cousin. When we read the story about the father, this is jumping that just sits with us so uncomfortable. We're so uncomfortable with the thought.
Because it's done without his permission.
And Tamar and Yehuda?
Well, it was fake. Not fake. It was
set up.
Set up. But
I don't know. Don't you just look at this whole situation as being like incredibly traumatic?
Yes.
People are confused and...
That's why,
desperate,
right? So that's what I pointed out, and I think that that's why I pointed that out, and I think that that's an important point to remember, that both Lot and his daughters have gone through some sort of trauma. So let's talk about Lot's role here for a minute. Let's talk. What you don't have, Lot does not have a role. Okay. First of all, one second. First of all, ignorance is bliss, except being drunk is not an excuse.
You have to be so drunk to not know anything that's going on. And then you wake up, so they tell me, not for experience, but you wake up really not feeling very well. So the first night, maybe. The second night,
right.
I don't understand.
I think that's if you even, like, let's say if you want to justify even the first night, and I say I don't think being drunk is an excuse, but okay, fine, you want to justify the first night, as you said, okay. But how does he justify even the second night as well?
When they say the father, their father
say it again.
Their life was so miserable in the cave, they had no TV, they had no so he was happy when he needed to be a little out of it.
The other way, drowning his daughter.
He's
died. His daughter died.
So they say the father was old, and that he wasn't quite, like they detected that he was really...
Perhaps that he's not, that he's no longer in control.
But it also doesn't say that he reacted at all. Once he saw they were pregnant, at some point he sees they're pregnant. So there's no reaction.
Not only is there no reaction, but after this story, by the way, Lot disappears. We never hear about him again. This is it. He disappears from the stage of history. Okay, so that's true. So it's unclear to us necessarily what happens to Lot and how we react to him. And I think you could read it, you know, you could either feel bad for him, you could feel that he was taken advantage of, or essentially, and I think that this is very true, that he is getting back what he taught. This is what he taught his daughters. They learned this kind of behavior from him. And so whether he's active or passive, he really is reaping that which he has told them. Now let's look carefully. You'll notice this is a biblical technique. you'll notice that it tells us the story of the daughters twice. It tells us about the older daughter, and then it tells us about the second daughter. It could have just said, and the second daughter did it too. But it repeats. So I want you to look at the verse 33, where it's the older daughter doing the action. And then I want you to look at 35, which is the younger daughter. And tell me what you see, what you notice about the psukim. What's the same, what's different? First of all, let's just point out, before we go any further, whose idea was this? The older daughter. Who is obviously the power behind these, you know, the idea? Who is the mover and the shaker here? The older daughter. That's clear to everybody. Okay, fine. So when you look at these two psukim, Lamed Gimel to Lamed Hey, what do you notice the same? What do you notice different?
Well, she, it says she went in, like she seems to have more...
Compare the verses carefully.
She seems to have more enthusiasm for it.
Why do you say she has more... Okay, so first of all, that's right. The difference between Vatavo HaBechira and Vatakam Hatsi'ira. What is the difference between Vatavo and Vatakam?
Vatavo is she's going out.
Right, Vatavo is going out. It seems to be... She's going out to do it. Vatakam almost sounds like, you know, she's pushing her into it. So that's one difference. What else do you see difference?
There's a we in here. I mean, English. Emo. I mean, that word is... It's almost like the older is one, like, maybe she had an afterthought, like, whoa, I did this.
No, once the father,
okay, notice that. That's right. In the when it says the older one slept with him, it says, Vatashkev et aviha. She slept with her father. There's no room for any sort of doubt. When the younger one sleeps with him, it doesn't say Vatashkav et aviha. It says emo. Now, we all know who the emo is, and it's the exact same act. But why do you think the pasuk changes from aviha to emo?
She was
yeah.
She was,
okay. You're beginning to start feeling here that the younger daughter is not as enthusiastic about this plan. And there's a certain amount of hesitation. First of all, prove it to me also, before I look at the skin, prove me another way that there's a difference between the two daughters.
The way they named the child.
The first one names the child May Av. She's announcing to the whole world that she became pregnant from her father. The second daughter, who has a little more, what do you want to say to a certain extent? She just says, B'nei Amon, Ami, it's more of a generalization. So that's also a difference. What else do you see? Look at the way the psukim are written. Look at Lamed Gimel. Vatashkena et avihen yayin balay lahahu. That is the correct way of writing a Hebrew biblical pasuk. Look at Lamed Hey. Vatishkena gam balay lahahu et avihen. Do you see that the et avihen is moved? In the first one it says, Vatashken et avihen yayin. Here it says, Vatishkena gambalalu et avihen. Why the difference? It's the exact same act. But again, why the difference?
There's a reluctance.
And sort of we're moving the father a little bit out of the picture. He's not directly involved there. Okay? So you have this, and I think by looking at the psukim, you are able to see that it is the older daughter's idea. She is this initiator, and it seems to be that the younger daughter, and by the way, one of the commentators I saw, they're called the Bechira and the Tzi'ira. But she's not really the Bechora because there were older married daughters. So the pshat would just be, well, these are the left. It's the older and the younger. There is another comment that says, well, maybe Lot had two wives. You know, the first ones were from the first wife, and this is the Bechira from the second wife. I don't think it really matters. But what it does matter is if you think about the stories in Bereishit, let's put these stories into the context in Bereishit. There's the older daughter and the younger daughter. And we have this idea that flows throughout the Bereishit that who is the preferred child? Yeah. It's the younger. The younger child, almost in all our biblical stories, is the preferred child. So even in our gross story of B'not Lot, our younger daughter here has a has an advantage over the older one as well. Anyway, so you definitely see that difference between these children. Okay, so we continue on with our story, and we know, by the way, what happens to Moab and Ammon. What is our relationship with them in the future? Okay, so if you look at source number, well, let's look at source number 8. In source number 8 is a whole bunch of psukim from Sefer Devarim, which tells us who can and who cannot marry within the Jewish people. Lo yavo mamzer bekal Hashem ad dor asiri lo yavo bekal Hashem. A mamzer cannot marry into the Jewish people. Lo yavo amoni umoavi bekal Hashem. A Ammonite and a Moabite may not marry into the Jewish people. Gam dor asiri lo yavo lahem bekal Hashem ad holam. Even for the 10th generation, they cannot marry in. Why? Al davar asher lo kidnu etchem belechem ubemayim bederech b'seitchem mimitzrayim. Because when we were coming out of Egypt and we were passing through their land, they, being our relatives, they should have come out and greeted us with water and bread, and they did not. And then, and osaf lezeh, asher shachav alecha et Bilam ben Ba'or miptar aram naharam lekal alecha. And also because of what happened with Bilam. Which brings us back to verse source number 7. In source number 7, if you remember the story, Vayeshev Yisrael b'shitim, Bnei Yisrael camped in the Shitim. Vayechal ha'am liznot et benot Moav. Moav was unsuccessful in cursing with Bilam, so they decided we'll bring the downfall of Bnei Yisrael another way, and they do that by sending their daughters out. Now, let's follow this through all the way through. We start with Lo to invite the guests, but uses his daughters to protect them. Then we come with the daughters who have a good intention to save the world, but sort of don't do it in the right way. Then we end up with Moav, who are seducing the Jewish people. And, like, where does this all come from? So what this all comes from is that we understand that there's a certain trait here that, maybe I even will call it, it's broken. It's broken hospitality. They won't give bread and water, but what will they give? Their daughters. It's like a completely, you know, perverse way of approaching this idea. But we understand where it all comes from. It really all comes from Lot. And we, you know, we have that expression, what goes around comes around. And that's what you see. So when you see later on Moav, you see them essentially fulfilling this cycle of perverse hospitality already in their time. But notice, so we said that before, you'll notice here though that it talks about Moav, who does not send their daughters? Ammon. Okay? So we do have a different kind of...
The question is, where does Lot get this from?
Where does Lot get from? Unfortunately, there are people, right, who have all kinds of weird ideas. Now...
Can I say something?
Sure. Yeah.
You mentioned the wife of Lot.
Yes. The Ramban. In the Ramban in Bereishit. He says, no. He just says, V'irit Eshet Lot, ba-ba-bam. He must have had some sort of Mesorah that was her name. Now, if you look at source number 10, source number 10 tells us why. We said already, we saw God's involvement in the story. We see God's involvement in that he has the wine in the cave, in that they both become pregnant so quickly. And the Midrash tells us one that we are familiar with, that what was happening here, we have the birth of two important people, one from Moav and one from Ammon. From Moav, it's Rut HaMoaviah, and you all know Rut. And the second one is Na'amah HaAmonit. Who is Na'amah HaAmonit?
Noah.
Na'amah HaAmonit. It can't be Noah. Na'amah HaAmonit. Na'amah HaAmonit is the mother of close Rechavam. Rechavam ben Shlomo, who becomes the king, who becomes the shalshelet of Beit David, comes from Na'amah HaAmonit. That's a good question. We have to start with Shlomo and his wife's is a different issue altogether, okay? But here, now, so this is the halakha. We know that from the story of Rut, Amoni v'lo Amonit. It's the men who aren't allowed to convert. The women are allowed to convert because obviously the women here have a certain midah, which brings us to our next question. Why does God have to have? Why does Shlomo HaMelech have to come from Rechavam HaMelech? I mean, why does the kingship have to come from a different place? And if you look here in source number 12 is the Shem Mishmuel, which is the Rebbe Mikotsk. The Shem Mishmuel says, Hine zikni zaycha tzadik v'kadosh livracha Mikotsk, amar d'inyan hamelucha lo haya nimtza b'Yisrael. He says, Jews don't really have the necessary genetic makeup to become king. We had to bring that gene from outside the Jewish people into the people via Amon and Moav. Ad kan l'shono ha-kadosh. This is his opinion. V'ha-peirush prashut. And it's very simple. Ki basher kol Yisrael ki-ish echad hema. Since all of Yisrael are brothers, and we are all responsible for another, and we're all equal, enu shayach she'echad yishtarer al chaveiro. It doesn't make sense that one should all of a sudden become superior to his friends. Kamo she'en ever echad she'be'adam yishtarela ever echad. I mean, is your right arm all become more significant than the rest of your body? So therefore, no single Jew can become more significant. Umosh Rabbeinu alav ha'shalom she'yam melech. V'hu machmat shehaya nivdal michlal Yisrael v'lo haya nechshav shehu ke'ever me'evrei haklal. Rak shekul Moshe keneged kol Yisrael. And don't use Moshe as a proof because Moshe is different and he was keneged kol Yisrael. Remember, he grew up outside of the Jewish people. Perhaps that's why he needed to be raised in the palace of Paro. Ulachein hu tzrach Yisrael litol hamlucha me'amon u'mo'av. And therefore, we needed to bring in this quality trait from Amon Moav, Mishum deklipat Moav Geut. Moav has a certain amount of haughtiness. Kemosha Ketuv Shema'anu Ga'on Moav Ga'me'od. Va'alken Eta Nefesh David HaMelech Alav HaShalom Timu'a B'Shvi'a B'toch Klipat Moav. David HaMelech, who's going to become the leader, who's going to become a Mashiach, has to have a little bit of haughtiness, a little bit of brazenness that comes from the older daughter. So you understand what he's saying is that since the leader has to fight the people, he has to be above the people, but it is not a natural Jewish trait, so therefore we have to bring this trait from outside and bring it into Am Yisrael, and we're doing it through these people. Now, there is another idea here as well, that King David is going to be the forefather of the Messianic dynasty. The job of Mashiach is not only to save the Jewish people, but the job of Mashiach is to save the rest of the world. So in order to save the rest of the world, therefore we might need to have genes from other nations as well, and that will make him, he will be able to relate to them on a better idea. Now, there is also the idea of giving the Melech HaMashiach some sort of skeletons in the closet. Those kind of ideas we can leave for a minute. Let's just take a look at two other sources. Let's look at source 13. Source 13 is the Alshich. The Alshich says, Sherut haya gilgol shel bnei Lot. The Alshich is very into Kabbalah, and he says that Rut Hamoaviah is actually a reincarnation of this daughter of Lot. Ki'ima kibita. What happened with the mother happens again with the daughter. Ki kasher hi l'shem shamayim shechva et aviha. Just the way this daughter of Lot slept with a father with good intentions, and you see, I told you, that is the most common approach in the commentators. Gam zot hava'a mishoresh nafsha va'asta v'te'aseh kimotah. So too, by making that comparison, we understand that that Ruth's motivation also was kedei l'shem shamayim. Okay, and she doesn't listen, and that she's able to fix it. That's right, it actually becomes a tikkun. That's right, it becomes a tikkun for Batlot. Okay, let's look for the last minute. I want to tell you one more story. When we talk about Gilgul, there is a remarkable story that appears in the Igrot Moshe. Igrot Moshe is the halacha book of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now, any of you who are familiar with Rav Moshe's halacha book knows that it's very black and white. This is not a guy who's involved in mystics. He's not involved in Zohar. He's very involved, is the fork milchix, is a flesh, very straightforward type. But in the introduction to his book, he tells a story that he experienced. And the story he tells like this. In the village that he was from in Europe, a man got very sick. And the sickness was his tongue swelled up. And obviously, the bigger it gets, I guess it says that you can't breathe. Rav Moshe was the Rav in the Kehila, and he came to visit the man, Bikoholim. And the sick man requested that everyone else leave the room. And he proceeds to say, tell Rav Moshe, I have a story I need to tell you. According to the man, the sick man, he said that 1 week earlier, when Parshas Vayera was read, he had trouble understanding the whole story of Lot and his daughters, and how could Mashiach come from them, and aren't they ashamed of engaging in sexual relations with their father, and announcing it to the world? You know, where is their modesty? Where is their... And the man spoke disparagingly about Lot's daughters. That night, two very old women with covered faces appeared to him in a dream, and told him that they were Lot's daughters. And they said they heard his argument, and they came from the world of truth to explain it to him. They argued that since they belonged to Avram's family and had been miraculously saved from Sodom, they could never be accused of sexual impropriety, and they could have claimed to the world that they became pregnant through immaculate conception. They could have said that, and everybody would have believed them, since they were from the family of Avraham, and since they were from saved from Sodom, they had the ability to say that, and they could have founded a new religion. They therefore called the children Ammon and Moab, in order to announce to the world that when a woman conceives, the child always has a father of flesh and blood. For telling this truth, they were rewarded by having Mashiach from the house of David be destined to descend from them. Since the sin of speaking ill of them is punishable measure for measure, the man's tongue had swollen with a strange disease, and thus he would die. When the man finished telling the story, he turned to the wall and passed from the world. Reb Moshe Feinstein viewed this story as revealing a truth. Another halakhic significance which he deduced from the story of Lot's daughter was the abnormality of father-daughter incest. Therefore, a father can be alone with his daughter. There is no yichud with father and a daughter, because incest is so not acceptable. And even if halachically they were not considered to be related in case of converts, etc., Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe continues to take the story into halachic ramifications. But I think what this story does is sort of changes our perception a little bit of the story. And you can imagine what the daughters could have said, well, we're starting a new religion, we became pregnant from God, and we are carrying, you know, the Savior. And they specifically, and that's why the Torah reads it with the details, to teach you that when a woman gets pregnant, there is always a biological father.
No, it's